is Dr. Yannick Chitayeva. Perfect or close?
Very
close. Who is a medical epidemiologist at the CDC. She works in the Community Interventions for Infection Control Unit. And rather than take from her time, I'm going to let her follow up since I know we've got one person really interested in this topic.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, so we'll go from general to more specific, and thanks very much for setting the ground for that. So I'll talk about the experience of one particular school district on how they dealt, how families dealt, and how the school dealt with the unplanned school closure. So as we all know, schools may serve as amplification points of influenza epidemic, and therefore school closures were proposed as one of the frontline community mitigation measures during the pandemic before the appropriate vaccine becomes available. And despite of this potential positive effect, school closures may also have caused difficulties for students and their families. And these difficulties are not fully researched and not fully understood. Therefore, investigations of the prolonged school closures that are undertaken to evaluate costs and consequences for students and families, they can inform pandemic preparedness planning. In late August of 2012, 9 school districts in the coastal region of Mississippi were closed as a part of the preparedness for the anticipated Hurricane Isaac, and all 9 school districts were closed for about a week. And we conducted our investigation in the Harrison County School District, which is the largest of these 9 districts that's closed. Harrison County School District includes 20 large public schools that enrolls over 14,000 students in pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. And 68% of these students are eligible for free and reduced price school lunches. Harrison County is pretty much comparable demographic-wise to the state of Mississippi, even though you can see that the community is a little better off than the Mississippi. The poverty level is slightly lower, and median household income and higher education is slightly better than the state level. The objectives of our investigation were to estimate costs and consequences of these unplanned school closures on students and their families, and also to describe the needs and concerns of school officials related to these unplanned school closures. We administered paper-based household survey in November, 3 months after the closure occurred. We distributed the surveys in student backpacks to parents and guardians in all 20 schools that are in the district. We requested one survey per household, regardless of the number of siblings in the household. So our unit of analysis was the household, not the students. And our questionnaire included questions on childcare arrangements during the closure, employment and income interruptions of adults in the household, difficulties with interruption of subsidized school lunches, additional expenses that families incurred during the closure, communication of school closure information, and perception of difficulties of the school closure. And the second part of our investigation was the semi-structured interviews that we conducted with the school officials. We analyzed data in SAS, we calculated descriptive statistics, and estimated financial and opportunity costs, and a high square test was used to evaluate the association. I will now talk about the results. So out of the over 14,000 surveys that we distributed to all students and all schools, and this number accounts for about 8,000 households that students reside. And out of this number, we received 2,229 surveys. And again, remember that it accounts for the household, not students. So this resulted in the response rate of approximately 28%. So 65% of our respondents were white, 25 were African Americans, and over half of the respondents had a college degree. Average household size was 3.8, 24% were single-parent household, and the rest of the household had at least one, at least two adults in the household. Our survey accounted for 4,084 children. Half of them were girls, and more than half of the children were in elementary school. More than half of the households had income lower than $50,000 per year. The most frequently reported alternative childcare arrangement was having an adult who lives in the household and doesn't work, taking care of kids during the closure, and it was followed by the care provided by an adult who works outside of the household full-time and had to take time off to take care of kids. And using daycare and childcare centers was the least frequently reported option. When we looked at the income and employment interruptions, we found that single-parent households, they have people who are employed full-time more frequently than households that have two adults and more, and they are also more have more burden on employment interruption and income. As you see, they miss work much more frequently and lost pay much more frequently than two adult households, especially compared to those households that have two adults and both adults are employed. Our respondents reported that majority of them didn't have any difficulties providing food despite of the lost access to the subsidized school lunches. However, among those that did report difficulties, factors that were associated with difficulties were lost pay of at least one adult in the household. Then low-income families were also, it was a burden for them as well. And African-American households were also significantly associated with the difficulty in providing food. 26% of the household reported incurring additional expenses for childcare, food, and gas during the week of closure. Median expense was $150 per household, ranging from $6 to $2,500. And the weighted average of additional expense was $39 per household if we calculate for all the households. The most expensive type of childcare was having working adults taking time off to take care of kids, and it was followed by care provided by adults that didn't live in the household providing care of kids. Childcare program was the least expensive option, but still it cost as much as about $180 on average. When we asked what was how families learned about the school closure, majority reported they learned it from the local news. However, the most preferred method for being communicated this kind of information is through the automated call from school and also the email from school. We also asked if about the perception of the adults of the school closure, and if they did experience the difficulty, what were the issues that they had to deal with the most during the closure. So about half of the respondents reported that they did not have any difficulty with the school closure. However, half of them reported they did have difficulty, and these difficulties were related to not knowing how long the school closure would last, about also losing pay during the closure and providing childcare arrangements. We conducted 20 interviews with principals and vice principals, and most of them thought that schools are very well prepared for the closure and have very good communication plans. And among the concerns, the most concern was about the duration of school closure, because it would cause the need to incorporate make-up days at the end of the school year, which usually put the burden on schools, such as paying for the substitute teachers. And also, during the make-up days, students show up in classes much less frequently, and because schools are funded by their attendance, this could also put the burden on schools, because they will be funded less for the next year based on that. Our study had several limitations. We only surveyed in one of the 9 school districts that were closed. However, we believe, because the school district was the largest of the 9, it had the largest student population and the largest geographic area that it covered, we believe that it was pretty representative of all the 9. And also, the response rate was 28%, which is the average expected response rate for this kind of survey distribution, that usually range from about 10 to 35% for the backpack surveys. So also, the demographic characteristics of our respondents are pretty close to those that we see in Harrison County, in the whole school district. So we believe that our sample is quite representative of their community. And last is the timing of investigation. The closure occurred in the late August, and we conducted the survey 3 months after the closure in November. So there is some potential recall bias, especially when we ask about the numbers, about the additional expenses and such. In summary, about 50% of the households reported some difficulty with the school closures, and these difficulties were related to uncertainty about the duration of closure, lost income and missed work during the closure, and also difficulty providing child care arrangements during the closure. Single parents and two adult households where only one person is employed reported missing work and losing pay much more frequently compared to households with two adults both working. Also, losing subsidized meal services was not reported as a frequent problem. However, as we saw, it can cause difficulties for the vulnerable population. Communication of school closure information is preferred through automated phone calls and emails from school or school district. And also, prolonged school closures may cause financial insecurity for the schools. And in conclusion, while planning for closing schools, especially during the pandemic, influenza pandemic, where the school closures can last longer than usual, this planning should account for vulnerable population by developing plans for providing free or inexpensive small group childcare alternatives, and also providing alternative way of subsidized food services for those low-income families. Communication of school closure information, as we saw from Susan's presentation as well, communication is always the key issue that arises in this kind of emergencies. So it should be tailored to the needs of the particular community, like in Harrison County, it was reported as automated phone calls and emails from school. And also, contingency financial planning should be done for schools in case of prolonged closure, so they don't have such a financial burden during the next academic year. And I would like to acknowledge many people who participated and who provided support to this investigation. Thank you very much.
I know, like 10, 15 years ago, places like UCLA, School of Public Health, would say you really have to watch letting the schools out, because then all the children that have any sort of flu or going to go to all the malls and hang out and just give it to everybody else. Is that now considered a myth?
No, actually.
It's still being looked into. Recongregation and the size of recongregation, frequency of phenomenon, is something that needs to be really fully examined. There were some research was done during the pandemic, and it indicated that it is not as frequent. And also, here there are anecdotal reports. Our director likes to saying that he has never seen 30 children going shoulder to shoulder through the mall. Nor have I.
I have.
So it's something to look into. Obviously, for a prolonged closure, one has to take that into serious consideration, because if we are looking at weak or longer, especially older children, the whole purpose is to keep kids apart. To keep them out of congregate setting where they're close together, age.
They were saying they were giving it to old people who were walking the malls and doing other stuff. So
right. So it's something to be looked into, and it's both the organizational and communication challenge, I think, for pandemic planning.
My question is, okay, so I understand it would make sense if it were single parents and two parents with both of them working that were losing more income, but to have them, two parents where only one is working, losing income, that the one that works stays home with the children seems to be sort of counterintuitive. Were you very specific in that question about that parents stayed home specifically to take care of the child, or did they stay home because they were also doing preparedness efforts for the hurricane?
Yeah, hurricane is very specific kind of situation, so we couldn't really account for did you miss work because your workplace was closed versus did you take time off. So some of them did indicate that yeah, they stayed because their workplace was closed. So we tried to account for that as well. And this study will also be published, and due to the time limitation, I couldn't include all the analysis that we have done, but in the paper we'll definitely address this differences.
I think it's an interesting closure that you may want to say. The hurricane didn't hit. They closed in preparation for landing. So there was no structural damage, which kind of brings this closer to pandemic situation than a natural disaster where actually there was a physical damage to the community. But, you know, the team is still pushing it out. Right,
not
it's a very different situation. If there, like for Sandy, that we didn't even try to investigate that because there was such a physical disruption, it's not comparable to pandemic.
I was actually a little surprised by the fact that there were
Yeah, and the school, because it's a hurricane region,
yeah.
The school are very prepared. They have this special alert kind of system, and all. And school officials, they actually think that their communication system works very well compared to maybe people just.
In Tennessee schools, they just call the radio and have it announced.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So that's very sophisticated.
Oh, yeah.
And also because it's a large school district,
yeah.
And it's a mobile kind of population, so it's hard to keep the constant phone log. That's what we heard from the superintendent.
Yeah,
so
did you ask them any information about where they would go to find out, you know, when the school would open back up? Would they use the same sources, TV?
It's pretty much, yes. They were advised to actually listen to the news,
okay.
And stay alert for that. So they didn't announce the reopening specifically.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought about looking at school closures that are due to outbreaks or ILI?
Yeah, well, actually, this investigation is one of the series of investigations that we conduct around the country. So we're trying to address any cause of the closure to see how different they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And we were lucky enough. During the last influenza,
disasters are good luck for.
Right, yeah. So some of the closures, of the prolonged school closures, they occurred due to ILI. So we were looking at two closures like that with the same kind of questionnaire, slightly adjusted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to see. I think it's dependent on the area, because in some, because they are based on the financial funding of the school is based on the attendance. For smaller schools, it's different than from larger school, and of course it varies from state to state. So there is no average.
Okay.